We have to start with our meeting. Let me declare this meeting officially open. And in so doing, we just want to inform the meeting that we received some apologies. The Minister of Police, Mr. Nathan Tetra, is not able to be in our meeting. He's attending a conference to be held in Dakar, and the police not in the country. Also, we have received an apology from Honorable Bobby Mochumi, who is on study leave. We also have received apologies from Honorable Ms. Kola Barnett, Mr. Swart, and Ms. Van Veek. They are stuck in the traffic from airport, so they will be joining us. Honorable Greg Sneeman as well is at least around Parliament now, so will be joining us. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you who are here, the members of the portfolio committee, but in a special way, I want to first inform the Deputy Minister that on the 2nd of this month, that is November this year, in the meeting we had with CIRA when they were presenting their annual report before the portfolio committee, we congratulated the Deputy Minister for your appointment as the Deputy Minister of Police. And in that meeting we said we do welcome the Deputy Minister, and we said that we do believe that you have a lot to contribute in this department, as you have more than enough knowledge of the issues that are in this department. The fact that you served for a lengthy period as a chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Safety and Security, having served as a member even prior to that. And therefore, as the chairperson, we said indeed you did lay a solid foundation which made it easy for some of us who followed you to move on or take up the baton and move forward. And therefore, we really appreciate the fact that we have you as our Deputy Minister, but of course the fact that we have a woman as the Deputy Minister. We also would want to welcome the delegation from the Secretariat of Police And I want to believe that we also have amongst us here the CFVR representative. The Minister of Police, Mr. Nathi Mthethwa, informed the chairperson sometime early this year that the former Minister of Safety and Security, Mr. Ngakula, had contracted CFVR to conduct a research study on the violent nature of crime in South Africa. He therefore requested the chairperson to find a slot in the program of portfolio committee program so that he could brief the committee about the report. As all of us will know, we indeed slotted in this briefing, but it became obvious that the report had first to go to cabinet before it could then be brought to the portfolio committee. It was for that reason that on two occasions we had to change dates, I think from May to September, and then this Saturday. We are happy that today this report will eventually be presented to Parliament through this committee. Many people in South Africa, including the Portfolio Committee and all of us, acknowledge the fact that one unique feature about South African crime is that it is violent. Anton Alberta, in his book titled A Country at War with Itself, says, and I quote, "Crucially, it was also essentially true. Apartheid, an extreme long-lived experiment in social engineering that shaped and deformed society for two generations, really was responsible for the cruelties people suffered and therefore for their subsequent behavior." I told Cook. Albeka, in his book, which I enjoy reading, he asked the question in that, what is the nature of South Africa's crime problem and how effective has it been addressed? And he responds to this question by saying, what makes South Africa's crime problem unique is not so much the volume of crime as its extraordinary violence. He argues that our addiction to violence is only partly explained by our history and by our current socioeconomic politics. He says the current police strategies which focus on preventing crime from happening cannot solve or even significantly reduce crime. He believes that we need a criminal justice system that comes down like a ton of bricks on people who commit violent crimes. His claims are quite controversial, but they are quite interesting as well, and also they are thought-provoking. I think today we'll get scientific facts about the violent nature of crime in South Africa. Why it is easy for a human being to break into somebody's house when they are inside, take their property at gunpoint, go on to rape a child or a wife while the husband is watching, and proceed to shoot and kill all of them. It is a common thing that, for instance, all of us as a country yesterday woke up to news that a 15-year-old child was raped at school by two young boys. For me, this is violence at its best. Happening or being a... happening and taking place in areas where you don't expect it to happen. A school, for instance. And the perpetrators being young children. I think that the topic, therefore, that we are discussing today is quite important, and I think it is of interest to the people of South Africa. I want to believe that the study that was conducted by CFVR will probably in a way try to address this matter and give us some way forward with the recommendations that probably, if implemented, might assist us as a country but also as a department. Having made these few comments, I will now hand over to our Deputy Minister, Ms. Maggie Soju, to lead the presentation, but I think we might be having CSVR people who we do not know, and probably they might also not be knowing the members of the portfolio committee. And therefore, I will allow members of the portfolio committee to introduce themselves. I am Cindy Chikunga. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I come from Mpumalanga. Let's just introduce ourselves.
I am Vela Pindlovu from the IFC. I come from KwaZulu-Natal. Kenneth Burr from Gauteng.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Molebogo and Christina Dube, known as Grace Dube, from Gauteng. Thank you.
My name is Mluleki George from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning. I'm Angie Molebogo from Gauteng, deployed by the ANC.
Thank you.
Good morning. I am Puelo Swati from Limpopo Province, representing the DA, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Greg Schneeman from the Portfolio Committee.
Okay, thank you very much. I think it is also important to mention that as the Portfolio Committee, as chairperson in particular, all that we could do was to invite the minister, as it was the minister who requested us to slot in this meeting or this presentation. And who is invited to the meeting is per the minister's invitation, not from the Portfolio Committee. And that is why probably it would be important that they introduce themselves. Over to Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thanks for that warm welcome. I feel very much comfortable being part of this portfolio committee, that is the Portfolio Committee on Police. As you are aware, and you have correctly said that, this is actually where I belong. I'm talking now about the sector, not talking about the position. It's true, I've been a member of this committee for 10 years. Being a member of the committee for 5 years, being a chair for 5 years, I was just enjoying my new diploma, which was Water and Environmental Affairs. Unfortunately, I'm here today. It's not because I wanted to come here. It's because of the instructions from my bosses that I'm supposed to come here and work with yourself and members of the committee. I'm happy to see that the very same faces that I left in this committee are still here. I once was led by Honorable Mluleki George, whom I took from the portfolio committee. And you are right by saying this is one portfolio committee that can't be divided along party lines, because we have all just one mission, that is to fight crime. Crime knows no party, crime knows no color, everybody's just affected. Thank you very much, Chair. On behalf of Minister Nakim Tsetsa, I'm here today to present the report to yourself and to the public. Now that you have dealt with the background of the report, I'm here thus as the Deputy Minister of Police, and also on behalf of my ministers, I have said to represent this report, to present this report to yourself and the public. The presentation will be done by the National Secretariat. Babusuf, the National Secretariat that we have now is not that the one that myself and you struggled. I know it was a nightmare when you said you invite National Secretariat. Everybody who had some sort of ailment will see that because everybody will take out the tablet and drink, because we're going to do oversight of the National, on the National Secretariat. I think the National Secretariat that we have now, the Demisha, they are doing a very good job. I'm only 5 days in this portfolio, but I'm impressed by the work that is being done by the National Secretariat. I therefore will give to Mr. Evan Tennis to present the report to the public for comment. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Okay.
Okay, just before we hand over to Mr. Kenneth, maybe to introduce the delegation from the Civilian Secretariat. Mr. Moore, who's sitting down, is operating the slide projector. He's the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Adele Kirsten is from the CSVR. And we're not going to be presenting two separate reports. We will be presenting one report. And then Mr. Kenneth, the head of the Policy and Research Unit. So I'll hand over to Mr. Kenneth to present. But obviously, Ms. Kirsten is here to answer questions on behalf of CSVR.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members, and thank you to the Deputy Minister for that introduction. Chairperson, this report was commissioned by the Minister of Safety and Security in 2007, and CSVR was contracted to produce a six-part report. If you remember, Chairperson, the killings, the Jeppestown killings of the police officers served almost as a spark to ignite the national debate on the state of violent crime in our country. And so this was started then already, I think towards the end of 2006, if I remember clearly. And so the report, Chairperson, is a very thick document. It's over 740 pages. The report will be made available in soft copies on the website after this presentation. It contains six parts, Chair. The first one, the first component, is a concept paper on the violent nature of crime in South Africa. That was submitted in June 2007. The second component is a study of murder entitled Streets of Pain and Streets of Sorrow, the circumstances of the occurrence of murder in six areas with high crime rates of murder. That was submitted in June 2008. The third component is a study on sexual violence entitled A State of Sexual Tyranny, the Prevalence, Nature and Causes of Sexual Violence in South Africa. That was submitted in December 2008. The fourth component is an analysis of the socioeconomic factors that contributes to violence entitled Adding Injury to Insult, How Exclusion and Inequality Drives South Africa's Problem of Violence. The fifth component is case studies on perpetrators of violent crime, which was submitted December 2008. 31st of January 2009, we received the sixth component, the summary report on key findings and recommendations. There was a supplementary report that was requested by Minister Mthethwa, which is entitled Why Does South Africa Have Such High Rates of Violent Crime, which was submitted in April 2009. The report, in terms of understanding violent crime, argues that violent crime must clearly be understood in terms of the form that it takes. You know, Chairperson, there's very many explanations of violent crime. What this report says is that you have to look at the form of crime, and that three forms of crime stand out. The first one is a false link to arguments, anger, and domestic violence, rape and sexual assault, and the third one is robbery and other violent property crimes. The report uses the National Injury Mortality Surveillance System data and the SAPS data to show the difference in violence in metropolitan and other parts of South Africa. Aggravated robbery is concentrated in the metropolitan areas. The profile of weapons that are used is different. Firearms are also more concentrated, particularly in the metropolitan areas. Cape Town is different from other metropolitan areas because there's a much higher use of knives in terms of this particular profile. The gender profile of victims is slightly different. If one looks at the proportion of female homicide victims, that is slightly higher in non-metro areas, as high as 15% as opposed to the metro areas when it comes to murder or homicide. The report says that while weapons are present in fatal violence, they are not omnipresent in non-fatal violence, Chairperson. The data also shows that aggravated robberies escalated in the last year dramatically in the middle-class suburban areas and formal businesses. Now, you must remember in the last year is when this report was written. So there's been some changes in the murder rates checked. So it also states that organized crime groupings are responsible and might be growing in certain metropolitan areas. However, the report emphasizes that the root of violent crime is a general culture of violence and criminality rather than a connection to organized crime in all cases. It also states that the overwhelming problem remains that individual acts of robbery are more likely to occur in townships and that are not part of organized crime. You know, Chairperson, this was raised in the committee before, this issue of cell phone robberies, where people walk in the streets in the township and it's taken. What the report seems to be saying is that that type of robbery is not necessarily organized. It's mostly perpetrated by young men with a criminal identity as individuals and as part of a broader gang, and that the culture of violence and criminality are the principal factors that underpins armed violence in South Africa. Non-metro areas are diverse with respect to violent crime. Limpopo and the Northern Cape are areas with the lowest rates of violent crime, Chair. The use of knives are more likely and the use of firearms are less likely in the provinces in terms of murders. Aggravated robbery are less common in the non-metro areas. And the national injury mortality surveillance data shows that women make up 13% of homicide victims, although the higher proportion, of these victims in the rural areas. The report also then concludes that the most violent crime is acquaintance violence, with the exception of robbery. Most of the violent crime is committed, in terms of this report, by people who know each other. There's a relationship, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, intimate partner. And then certain aspects of crime in the metros have been given prominence by civil society groups in the media. The report seems to say later, Chair, that we've really played up this this issue of violence, particularly certain forms of violence in civil society and the media. And then other findings of the report is that male-male disputes in the six murder area study account for about 45% of murders. Chair. That particular study took place in six areas, three provinces. And the street robberies and robberies in other public spaces account for the majority of aggravated robberies and 13% of murder. Specific factors which there are specific factors which sustain this culture of violence, and that includes inequality, poverty, unemployment, and the social exclusion and marginalization. The report also says that the perception and values relating to violence and crime that's held by in particular young males contributes to this. The vulnerability of young people is linked to inadequate child rearing and inappropriate youth socialization is another factor, Chair. And then the weaknesses of the criminal justice system and the line systems and other causes include the availability of firearms and widespread use of other weapons. There's the role of alcohol, and there's the attitudes of male sexual entitlement, and the domestic and regional and local criminal economy also plays a role. The report makes a set of recommendations, Chairperson. Now, just before I go into those recommendations, we've discussed the recommendations, and the recommendations are not, and CSVR, we've had this discussion with him, it's not innovative recommendations, but the recommendations are really building blocks to what it is that we need to fix the problem of crime in the country. The first one is that it recommends a strategy to address armed violent crime in metropolitan and surrounding areas. The bulk of our crime, Chair, is committed in these metropolitan areas, although we don't know enough of what's going on in the rural areas. So we ought to take note of that, Chair. It suggests that we need to develop policing strategies for addressing armed violence. We need to invest in the research aimed at identifying and publicizing good practice at in local-level policing and addressing armed violence. It also suggests that we need to, or it recommends, the strengthening of evidence-based crime investigation and prosecution. Also the strengthening measures to ensure police integrity. And then as far as child justice is concerned, an armed violence strategy is likely to lead to the apprehension of more young people involved in armed violence. The second set of suggestions looks at creating safety in public and other zones. It looks at declaring public areas that are gun-free zones. It speaks specifically about discouraging violence and bullying at schools in particular. Violence has moved onto the school grounds, Chair, and it's making this particular suggestion. Also creating weapon-free zones in drinking establishments. A lot of the shootings that happen at Shabins, it's suggesting that we ought to consider creating a weapon-free zone, particularly in Chabins, and then improving safety in prisons so that it becomes violence-free. I think the point that the report makes about prisons is that people who come out of prison tend to, because it's so dehumanizing, tend to seek revenge when they come out of prison. There are many problems with the prison system. The third set of recommendations is supporting positive and healthy child and youth development. It suggests a coherent and sustained family support program that focuses on single parent households, particularly those headed by teenage mothers, a dedicated and comprehensive early childhood development program that provides support to the children coming from dysfunctional households, and then developing interpersonal and emotional pro-social skills, including the ability to manage conflict and aggression for primary and adolescent school children. It suggests that we also ought to look at after-school care program intended to assist young people in finding creative and positive ways using recreational time. And then it also suggests programs aimed at promoting positive and constructive lifestyles for young people in the 14 to 22 year age cohort group. And then the last suggestion or recommendation there is reducing the use of alcohol by pregnant women, as well as providing nutritional support to pregnant women, infants, and young children. So clearly the recommendations talks about a response across our criminal justice system and inclusive of other government departments. The fourth one is addressing this culture of violence. It suggests that we ought to advocate against violence politically and other leaders to promote a non-violent culture. It looks at implementing national programs of action to strengthen non-violence, and then developing public education initiatives, providing information about the acquaintance violence and how to intervene and or prevent it. Abuse of women and children in particular ought to be subjected to a public education campaign, Chair. And then working with communities to develop programs of action against violence. The fifth recommendation there is addressing violence in poorer communities. So Africa, it suggests that South Africa, what we're getting wrong in the country is that we continue to adopt policies in terms of policing that favors the well-to-do over the poor. The response of the police is almost by design looking at dealing with crimes against the middle class. The bulk of the crimes in this country is happening in working class areas, in poor and rural areas. And if one looks at the trio crimes and the percentage that it takes up of the South African crime picture, then it's not as big as the types of violent crimes that are happening within the townships. And then structural factors of inequality have no voice in the public arena. These young men that commit crime really have no voice publicly to say what it is. And I think one of the reports look at perpetrators. Other recommendations suggest that we ought to look at how we collect data and how we report those particular crimes, and that we ought to provide support to the National Injury Mortality Surveillance System, and then we also ought to provide support to reporting on non-metropolitan areas, and that literally means we don't know enough of what's happening in our rural areas and other non-metropolitan areas. Crime statistics. It's suggesting that we ought to use the police station as the basic unit for the release of crime stats. Previously, there were areas, but that has been disbanded, and the report makes that particular point where your area commissioners play the role in terms of bringing the crime stats together. And then understanding violence, as another recommendation, it suggests that we need to work with the state civil society organizations and academic research agencies to clearly understand this nature of crime in our country, Chair. Chairman, we produced this report and we've looked at what the strengths and weaknesses of this report is. We think that it provides an overview of the big picture of violence in our country. It provides a large amount of material which are helpful to anyone trying to understand violence in the country. It includes some new research, Chair. And the report is also very useful in integrating a lot of the work that has been done by a lot of different researchers on violence in South Africa up to this particular point. So we think it reopens the debate around crime in a way that does not politicize it. You know, the point about this report is that it tries to draw on the data that exists around crime and crime prevention. The concept of armed violence is helpful as an overall concept for defining the violence which is most serious and contributes to the most death, serious injury, and fear. The proposal that social mobilization against violence should focus on violence broadly is also worth considering. We think that the framework of recommendations put forward in the report have some new elements. Their main value is in emphasizing the fundamentals of a clear and coherent strategy for addressing violence. And then it recognizes that a lot is already being done to fight violence in our country through the criminal justice system department. And there are also some elements which call for government to reorientate itself in this fight against crime. Where we think the report has some limitations and areas that we think potential avenues for further research, areas that we think we need to go in quite extensively. We think the report is almost lacking this concept of the culture of violence and criminality and the culture of violence. We think that needs to be unpacked and better understood. What we're saying is that we don't know enough to understand, and I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. If we take two brothers living in the same household, living in a very poor area that is very, very violent, you have one family, two brothers, that socialize in exactly the same way by the same parents, and one turns out to be violent and the other not. And we don't think that the report extensively goes into that, and that's why we say we need more research to understand that. There are research papers internationally that have been done about why people, what are the predisposing factors for why young people turn violent. And there's a host of reasons, Chairperson, in the literature, why this happens. Some argue that there's that the young individual is predisposed towards crime. Others argue that it's the environment that determines the behavior of the child. Others argue that it's chemicals, tartar resin. Others argue that it could be the chemicals in if you give the child too much sweets and those chemicals, it could cause the child in the longer term to be more aggressive in terms of his behavior. So the reports do not really engage with the implications of the post-1994 policing environment when one looks at human rights-based policing, community safety forums, and so forth, for the response to crime. Related to this, more could have been said about police violence and its implications for violence. You know, the police as an institution also contributes towards violence in their particular methods. And we've seen that as part of the apartheid legacy. So the report aims to use the best available data to portray a picture of violent crime. Although there's been concerns about the reliability and the availability of data, and that highlights the need for improvements in data collection on violence, and that means how we report crime, how we record crime. We ought to be looking at that. What we're concerned about in the Secretariat is we're worried about this thing called South African exceptionalism. You know, Chair, the old government criminalized your involvement in politics. The apartheid government criminalized involvement of black people in particular when it came to politics. What seems to be the trend post-1994 is that crime has become politicized. And that is our concern, and we seem to self-flagellate ourselves. We seem to, as a nation, when we've made progress, if one looks at crime rates internationally, and particularly murder, if one looks at nations and countries like Jamaica and Mexico and Colombia, and see what's going on in those particular countries, particularly the global south, then we have made slow but steady progress as far as crime is concerned. And we worry that we keep on seeing ourselves as exceptional to what's going on internationally. In most of the post, in the transformation of countries in the, one looks at the Soviet Union, one looks at the Balkans after 1989, one looks at South America, and you see that this increase in crime is a natural phenomenon in most of those countries that are undergoing social transformation. Because when a country moves from a dictatorship or an undemocratic state to a democratic one, what normally happens is that the social controls are initially loosened. that kept people in check. And when that happens, there are a number of changes that happen. So we don't think that we want to see a situation where this becomes the very old debate of crime in the country, and that we go back to South African exceptionalism. The fact is, we are not the country with the highest murder rate in the world, and that's been so for some time, Chief. The question about why some countries with histories of violence are not as violent as South Africans deserve further exploration. Or, to put it more locally, you can go to one particular community, and let's take Alexandria, you can go to areas in Alexandria that is very violent, and you can go to another area in Alexandria that's not as violent. And we think that more research ought to be looking at this particular factor, where you get to a community in Mitchell's Plain that everybody tells you is violent, and when you go in there, it's not as violent as people make out to be. So we're into this business of labeling our communities to our own detriment. And other limitations is the question about why some poorer communities are strongly affected by violence, whilst others are less affected also deserves further exploration, we think. The concern with violent crime should not lead to crimes of the rich, such as fraud, embezzlement, and corruption, and their impact on society being neglected. We ought to look at how this contributes to how the types of crimes of the rich impact on poorer people. We think that the study also highlights the relatively limited information about violence in rural areas. We've already said this. We think that more research ought to be done as far as this is concerned. While the report engages with questions about the causes of crime, there is still more that could be done here, we think. For instance, there are big questions about the role of personality factors in contributing to young people's involvement in violence and criminality, while others do not. We have some young people that are deeply involved in it, and other young people that are deeply involved. One of the points that the report makes is for street robberies in non-metropolitan areas, it's almost a recruiting ground for metropolitan areas. The types of organized syndicates that happens is that people are recruited. You have to actually commit a street crime in order for you to be picked up. Now, that isn't a thing that's understood in criminological language. That you can't, they say the most difficult crime is your first crime. But once you've passed that test, it's easier to commit other crimes. Can we move on? Sorry. And we've got to move on here. Next one, yeah. Some concluding comments, Chair. The interest and advocacy groups have played an important role in bringing aspects of the problem of violence into focus. We think that alongside this, key dimensions of the problem of violence have been rendered invisible. We think that the response to violence needs to be aligned with the nature of violence in each community. Each community is different. And how we respond to it might not resolve. It's not one size fits all in some communities, but generally one can get a general response to violence, but there are some communities where it's just very, very, very difficult to implement. And we always ask the question, why isn't it working? Why isn't the interventions worked? There's the importance of reliable systems for gathering data about violence. And the question, what form does armed violence take, is useful in clarifying what aspects of problems in each community should be regarded as most serious, such as, for instance, sexual violence. Can we move on? Our conclusion is that the report appears, Chairperson, to be extensive with different sections addressing different forms of crime. As said in the beginning, it's a six-part report. It's over 740 pages, so there's a lot of information in this particular report. And part of the value of the report appears to be the fact that it provides a framework for understanding violence, notably the context of major forms of violence in our country. We think that it opens the debate on the nature of crime in the country, which is useful. We've had many debates in the past in the country about the causes, but what causes crime? And we're now looking at this nature of violence. It also raises questions about the most serious forms of violence and the manner in which it is addressed. And then lastly, Chair, it opens up the issue of difference in violence between high violence, wealthy and poor communities, and the need to respond to violence in both types of communities effectively. So, we do want to say that there's both positives and negatives in this particular report for us, Chair. we read it with a very, very critical eye. As to understand, this is 3 years of work that has gone into this particular report, and we think that we, in terms of the way forward, we're suggesting that the recommendations must be seen as building blocks of a crime-fighting approach. We think that some of the recommendations in this report is already being addressed by the JCPS cluster. The study raises many questions about the causes of violent crimes in our country, and it's a debate that will continue ad infinitum, because there's no agreement even internationally what causes violent crime. Different criminologists take different perspectives on what causes crime in different countries across the world. So it's a debate that you could never say it's a closed debate. It will go on in the academic circles forever. The Civilian Secretariat for Police is currently engaging with academics and other institutions to assist in providing more clarity in this particular issue. We're also collaborating with Statistics South Africa to initiate another victims perception survey, which they will undertake next year to understand the patterns of victimization in our country. There has been the last victim, the authoritative victim survey has been in 2003, the chairperson, which this report also draws on. We, as the Secretariat, based on the above, we are already developing a policy to build community safety forums, chairperson, and our policy will probably be finalized by December this year. And this will address many of the social issues that have an impact on safety and violence mentioned in the report. We also think that the re-establishment of the FCS units will help to address aspects of acquaintance violence. Also internationally, just the clear-up rate with acquaintance violence ought to be higher, and it is higher internationally, because when murders are committed by people who know each other, often it's easier for police to find the perpetrator. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much.
Some of the issues, but they did resolve issues that I raised with them when they presented the report to myself yesterday. I think he did resolve issues. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I want to believe that members will definitely want to ask questions. As I was reading this report, I ended up actually asking myself as to, because it puts a lot of emphasis on the culture of violent crime. It says a central distinguishing feature is the prominence of weapons. The core of the problem of violent crime in South Africa is a culture of violence and criminality. I ended up asking myself as to whether it's the culture, the name culture that I understand to mean culture. And actually I was asking myself as to whose culture is this? What is the origin of this culture? Because I couldn't myself think of any person or any grouping that normally will embrace a culture of violence as culture defined in sociology, for instance. And I wished that the researchers could probably explain just this one aspect to us, to say what exactly do they mean by the culture of violence. And I in my mind, they came a question to say probably it should also be explained to us as to how did they define violence. What was the measure of violence in this research? To say this we regard as violence, outside this it would be something, so that of course we don't have too many external variables brought into research. I don't know. I had a question as to say what exactly was the methodology they used in conducting this research, and one would definitely be interested to find out as to what. But let me allow members to ask questions. I think I have quite a number of them. Let me take hands, Honorable Greg, Honorable Jovu, Honorable Reverend Mishri, Honorable Bridget George, Honorable Swate, Honorable Kikheto, Honorable Miss Kola Banat, in that order.
Chair, thanks very much. Apologies for being late. There was an accident on the highway, which I think gridlocked Cape Town this morning. Thanks to the Secretariat for the report. I've been hearing about this for quite some time. But I've got some specific questions that I want to ask, because it doesn't really seem to come out in this report. And also, we only received this document now, today, I think. Well, I've only seen it today, so one hasn't read this bigger document. But, when we say that, I mean, South Africa is violent, and one of the most violent countries in the world, but I wanted to ask, has the study taken into account and into consideration that throughout the world, crime is becoming more violent? The UK, for instance, if you watch Sky News, increasingly, you are seeing horrifically violent acts taking place. Young people just walking around, slashing people with knives, etc. If you look in Europe, you're finding the same thing. South America, you find the same thing. Incredibly violent. And I'm just wondering whether this report has taken it into consideration. I'm not one for one moment to say that we don't have violent crime. We do. But I think that I'm asking is whether have they looked at elsewhere in the world? And it's a pity that the, I mean, I don't know if in this document here it actually talks about other countries specifically, I'm not sure. But I think we have to acknowledge the fact that there's a violent element increasing throughout the world, not just in South Africa. So that's my first point. But if you look here in South Africa, if you look at society in general is violent, it's aggressive, and I'd like to know whether they've looked into that as to whether what impact that has in terms of crime. For instance, we see it on our roads every day, road rage. It's something that's increasing. It says to me that there's something going wrong with society. And then what happens often is a crime committed. Often you'll drive along the road and you see motorists fighting at each other. And next when somebody pulls out a gun, there you've got a crime. So I'm wondering, have we looked at those things as well as to whether this and what's causing this? What's causing this rise of anger in society? And that's not just here in South Africa. And then my last question would be really just around the role of family structures. Has the study looked at family structures in society? Is there a breakdown of family structures? What is causing somebody who may be brought up in a home, in a loving family, to suddenly turn violent? What's causing that? And I think that, certainly in this report presentation here, I'm not getting the answers. But I think that we've got to be looking somewhere else. And I wonder whether the study actually looked at that, because in my opinion, Chair, in conclusion, I think we have a general problem in society. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to thank the Secretariat for the presentation that they gave it to us. I particularly want to zoom in on two questions, Chairperson. I think the Child Justice Department legislation has passed last year, and it has effect on criminality of the children or the child, people who are underage. What effect has been studied on that Child Justice Act legislation that has taken place? Because there are so many people who are underage who have been criminalized as we speak. The second chairperson, it's a criminal creating weapon-free zones. intriguing establishment. It has come a bosom, a big word where you find that there are ship in next to the schools. And there are areas where you can get anything next to the schools. And some of the young people are involved in most of these shipping next to the schools. What sort of research has been done on those things? Because I remember old days that there were rules that such a place must not be next to the school. There were lines that were drawn that the place like those are not supposed to be built next to the schools and so on and so forth. Lastly, Chairperson, there is these so-called groups which are coming out of correctional services, which call themselves 28 or 26 and so on and so forth. What impact do they have when they come out of the correctional services, when they are integrated to the to the society? Because maybe some of the things that they learn in correctional services or in prisons will have to be implicated outside and being done again outside. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. My first question has to do with the culture of violence that we heard about. It would be interesting to know when and how this culture was introduced and by who. The other countries that we are told and that we know are also violent. Are they also talking about a culture of violence? Or is it only South Africa that's talking about the culture of violence? And I would want to know why, if all these other countries have violence, but we have a culture of violence. When and how was it introduced? And secondly, we heard that post-1994 crime has been politicized. Now, I'm not sure whether I understand or agree with this. I would have thought that pre-1994, crime was politicized, not post-1994. So I need further clarity on what are they basing the statement that post-1994 crime has been politicized, because I think the relationships between different political organizations post-94 have improved dramatically compared to pre-1994. On what do they base that? And thirdly, the presenter said when a country moves from a dictatorship into a more democratic society, social controls are relaxed. Now, I would agree with that. Now, among the recommendations, I would have expected something to be said about social controls being strengthened. Now, would I be correct to think that the presenter believes that if social controls are strengthened, that that is going to help to bring down the levels of crime? Obviously, that also has to do with what my colleague has asked about the breakdown of family structures. Now, there is no reference to that. It's not seen as a problem. So I also want to know whether the breaking down of family values and a family structure does have an impact on the increase in violent crimes, and how do they recommend that that problem should be addressed? Thank you.
Madam Chair, let me speak for myself. My first limitation is that we get this document now, so we have not been able to look at this document. So some of the questions will be sometimes based on that limitation. We have not read this big document. But the question the use the police station as a basic unit for the case of crime start. What does that do with violent crime? Can I be told? The releasing of crime studies to the police station, what does that to do with violent crime? because it's just thrown youth police station to announce the release of statistics. What is that to do with violent crime? They also, you see, because we have not read this, their statements are made, which some of us agree. So I must say, not bothered much about what's happening in other countries, but the truth of the matter, we have got a problem of violent crime in South Africa. That one we must accept. It's a big problem. I mean, we're not talking about what you read in the papers. Some of the things they say, where old people, 81, are killed by young people who have taken everything from the household. So, but they mentioned something, witness on the criminal justice system, which is another witness. But there's nothing that is said. What is it? I don't know. Like I'm saying, the witness was not ready to document. Probably there is a recommendation on how do you address these witnesses of the criminal justice system. Availability of firearms. You see, what do we do? We've tried everything. There has been, what is this thing? Amnesty. Yeah, there's been everything. Rape. But the firearms in South Africa are still many. In fact, a lot of people in South Africa with firearms. In fact, people are not supposed to have firearms. They have firearms in South Africa. And that is the problem. But there is nothing that says how do we address that. You see, say gun-free zones. It's easier said than done. Who's going to make sure that these areas, because it means you must have police. Who's going to make sure that these areas where you say they must be gun-free, who's going to police and make sure that the people? If you, it's easy to say schools must be gun-free. Do you have, are you going to have police for each and every gate at the school to put police to make sure that everybody who enters the school is searched to make sure that guns? You see, because also you must be very careful. You must not come with solutions that are not practical. You see, if you say gun-free, let's know how is that going to be implemented. There is a very good statement supporting positive and healthy and youth development. Probably is in this document again. How do you do that? At what cost? How much is that going to cost? Because that's a huge, huge, huge task. It's not a small task. Because family values are not improving. They, in fact, they're breaking down, they're getting worse. So, if you say now we must have this supporting of positive and healthy and youth development, that's a good thing. Everybody will agree with that. But how is it going to be done? And what is how, at what cost? Because you must understand that we're not a country that has everything. So if you say we must do these things, we must also look at, do we have the resources to do that? Well, I'm not going to talk because also I'm very interested. What is this culture of violence? It has been said by many people. I would like somebody to tell me also, what is this culture of violence? Because everybody, I hear even in this, people talk about the culture of violence. What does that mean? And the last thing is the issue of poorer areas and countries with a history of violence that are not as violent as South Africa. What is the reason? Why do you have countries? If you say South Africa has got violent crime because of the history of violence, why are countries that has got also a history of violence do not have the same violence like we have? So I'm saying, to me the research is good. Probably when we have read, we might get more. But if you don't get some of the issues here, it means the resources has fallen far short. Because I don't believe this research was meant for academic exercise. Our biggest challenge in this country is to bring the levels of crime down. And therefore, any research that is done must be aimed at that. Not just for sake of research. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, members. I've got several questions to ask. My first question is with regard to the root causes of crime, which is general, which according to the report is saying that it's a general culture of violence and criminality. So I actually also want to be actually clarified in this regard, because I think we are not actually coming up with the root cause, because if we are saying it is this general culture of violence, to me it doesn't give us the root cause, because we must address the root cause, what is causing this crime. And my second one is with regard to the crime being politicized. It is indicated here that the crime was politicized post-1994, and I just want to know if maybe that is actually, we can rely on that one, because when I think before 1994, the crime was high, and because we had this question of replacing people, had this culture, we had this question of banning schools, libraries, and all those other related crimes were actually very high. The killings in 1990, 1991. So I just want to find out if ever maybe you've started to do this research after 1994. What about before 1994? Because maybe that actually also overlapped after 1994. So I just actually want to be clarified on that regard. And another one is with regard to partly Honorable George touched it with regard to creating safety in public and other spaces. You indicating here that public areas that are gun-free zones. So I wonder, because this was actually happening a long time ago, police were actually patrolling and searching people. So I actually don't know as to whether maybe you want that to be actually tripled, or you want to come up with another mechanism to make sure that the raids and the searching is intensified, or you want to bring another method where we can actually see that this is, might also help to reduce crime. And also with regard to creating weapons-free in the drinking establishment. We're talking of the taverns here, that actually Honorable Ndlovu has indicated that there are taverns closer to schools. So are you recommending that those taverns should be closed down, or are you saying that you are going to put more police to actually to search those people who are going to enter those taverns, or what mechanism actually do you want to, the police to put in so that this could be realized? You also indicated in this report that the South Africa continues to adopt policy that favors the well-to-do over the poor. So it shows that here, yeah, that you're indicating that here, yeah, those people who are in the poor areas, their voices are not actually heard. But when I look into this, I don't know actually the solution to this, because you're not indicating what needs to be done to address this kind of a problem, because you are correct when you are saying that some of the voices are not heard. And in the rural areas, that's where criminals start to train people. They train people in the rural areas and they take them from the rural areas to the urban centers to commit those crimes. So what do you think could be done to actually help to actually stop that or nip that in the bud? Because otherwise, if we don't do that, those people will be taken from the rural areas and commit more crimes in the urban centers or even in the township. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also take the opportunity to thank the presentation. You are saying, sir, that the crime was politicized post-1994. I am saying the opposite. It was politicized prior 1994. Acts were criminals. And the
guns and everything were given to white people. So that was politicization at that particular time. I'm happy that you are talking about free zone public areas. I think that is very, very important. It's long overdue. It needs a political intervention, and we must do something like banning these guns, knives, other guys, throw them into the sea in the public areas. I agree. You talk also about I think this we need to evolve when we seek to create gun-free zones. We also need to talk to our nations about this endeavor. We can't do it without them. Probably in our quest to achieve this, this is quite big and we need the support of the community. Probably a referendum will be needed amongst the communities of this country so that we decide once and for all. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies as well for being late. Traffic has not been nice this morning. Chairperson, first of all, I wanted to say that I've really got a problem when we talk about a culture of violence, because I don't believe that is correct. I don't believe South Africans by nature is a violent country or a violent nation. For me, it is like speaking about the lost generation. Now, if you look at the so-called lost generation and you look at cabinet today, it's that very lost generation that are actually running the country. The age group of the ministers, especially the new group of ministers, are the so-called lost generation. So I think it's really a question of generalizing. I don't believe South Africans are by nature a violent nation. I don't believe that. And I really have a serious problem about us using the term culture of violence. Yes, crimes are violent, but why are they violent? Typically, we see opportunity crimes, we see organized crimes, and we see sexual crimes, but we also see what we can simply call simply senseless violent crimes. In the past few months, 400 babies have been dumped. We see partners attacking each other. We see children, young children, getting involved in murder, etc., etc. And for me, there's one thing that I don't see this report, and I mean, I also have to go through it in detail, and I need to add my voice to those who say that we only received the presentation this morning. It might have been here yesterday, but parliamentarians are not here yet, on a Monday. For me, there's one factor that I think that this report is not touching on, and that I believe is becoming more and more of a challenge to South Africa, and that's the abuse of alcohol and drugs, and the role that that plays in especially the senseless, violent crimes that we see, those among children, the dumping of babies, etc., etc., etc. We can really, even in the opportunity crimes, where you see that health robbery takes place, where it's organized crime, health robbery, there will be less violence than when it is a situation where somebody is robbing a house to make sure that they can keep their habits going. I believe also that we need to look at how we're going to address holistically the issue of the abuse of drug and alcohol in this country. It's not something that I believe the police alone should be addressing, but it's something that should be addressed throughout different departments, education, health, social development, etc. But I would like to hear comments on that specifically. Chairperson, the other thing that I found missing in looking at it, and it might be there, as I say, we haven't had the opportunity to go through it in detail, is what role does our current criminal justice system play in adding to, or not adding to, but not rehabilitating what can be called violent criminals? Are we succeeding in the restorative justice? Are we succeeding in rehabilitating violent criminals? Honest opinion, no, we're not, but what are we going to do in order to do that? I think those are the questions that I don't see answered and that I don't think has been addressed properly either. Alternative sentencing. Community courts, the traditional courts that actually can intervene in communities and solve issues before it becomes a violent issue. See, you know, the senseless killings in KwaZulu-Natal, there are indications now. You would remember when we went to KwaMashu, we found out about this new drug that they use, antiretroviral. Yeah. Plus some sort of clay and dapa that they smoke. There are now indications that those people have been using those drugs before they actually committed bunga or something. That they were using that before they committed these crimes. And I really think we need to look at all these factors that are contributing to change people's behavior, their normal behavior. But then, sure, we need to ask why are people going the route of drugs and alcohol and abuse of that as well. But just those few things, my comments, but really I have a serious problem that we say South Africa's got a culture of violence. I really don't believe that.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, sorry to interrupt you. Could I ask a few... That's fine. I know Honourable Annelies get it in after the... But I still beat her here from Durban. this report, obviously, is something, and this section of it is something we've waited for 6 years or so. I'm very interested in the total cost of this entire... The full product, the 740-page document, to this ministry. You know, one of the biggest threats in our fight against crime, in my opinion, is the fact that our ministries have tended for a long time to work in silos. Here we have reference to the social cluster with regards to this report. When looking at the increased violence relating in every aspect, we look at education or the lack thereof, and social welfare, and youth pregnancies, the increased incidence of attempted murder of our youth, health, the impact of HIV, AIDS, labor, some unemployment as the major issue driving crime. Certainly the reports given at the meetings of the Correctional Services Portfolio Committee last week that I attended did support the claim that our recidivism rate is extremely high. Honourable Annelies referred to alternative sentencing. Has that all been brought into the mix? One would have expected that ministry to have been equally involved, and I fear that, like so many other reports that are produced here in Parliament, this one, there's no golden thread. Where is the golden thread between all the ministries? Are there other ministries perhaps replicating sectors or sections of this, and cannot this report be presented to every single ministry and get a buy-in from all of them? Because I think that is crucial. I'd be very keen to know how soon this committee will receive that full structured 740-page report. I think that's essential. I know it isn't different sectors and sections, but I think we need the final document. And if I could put a question directly to the CSBR, how much buy-in have you had with regard to the outcomes and the conclusions of the research from the Ministry of Police? Now, is there a suggestion that the strategic plans in future will speak to the implementation of the suggested strategies. And I did agree with the statement by the presenter that the SAPs contribute to violent crime on occasion by their actions. But then again, they can't, and nor should they ever be expected to go up against a drug syndicate with pea shooters. I mean, they have to be a fighting firepower with firepower. But certainly within the SAPs, we have seen a certain contempt for civilians and the abuse of power, and that's something I would hope has been examined within the research and recommendations proffered. And then finally, what buy-in is there in relation to this research from government as a whole? Because one of the recommendations on page 60 is that there must be an advocating against violence with political leaders promoting a non-violent culture. And certainly that's not currently the situation. We do see violent speech and songs utilized as political tools regularly. Now, was there a focus on the impact of this exhortation to violence by political leaders in our society? Again, what would the recommendations be? Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for those questions. You know, as I was reading the report, I'm not very sure whether it's because we don't have the ticket document, but the report seemed to be completely quiet on the relationship between our past, our violent past, and probably the violence that we may be seeing today. I was actually reminded of the fact that I grew up at some stage living in a mission that was surrounded by farm areas. And the brutality, and that was in 1987, as Honorable Swart is saying, somewhere the brutality was the order of the day. You would be an old man kicked around. You want to visit that house because you want to go and play. You have to run because any time you'll be shot at, you'll be killed, and nobody will be accountable for it. So it was like that. And we grew up seeing these things happening. Our fathers believed that if you want to show that you have power, you must be brutal, because this is what is happening somewhere where they are working. I can't understand as to why there is completely no mention, unless, of course, I missed out on this one. Al Becker is actually referring to our violent past, but the report is not saying anything about it. It became part of South Africa that you'll have the other side government shooting at people, massacres that we know of in this country, people dying in their numbers, and people throwing stones. It became part of getting things. Is it by chance that today we see strikes that are violent, and they cannot be linked to where we are coming from? And the research of this magnitude cannot link a relationship between that which happened in the past and this which is happening today, these violent strikes and so on, and as a result, violent protests, for instance, by COSAS, that is growing. I mean, these learners that are coming up. Is there a relationship? That will be my question. Is it an omission, or it's because the researcher thought there isn't any relationship between the two? I was really interested to know, because this is in details. So one will be interested to know, like I asked earlier on, as to what methodology did you use in conducting this broad research with so many issues to deal with, but in particular the reason why we have a violent crime in South Africa. And such a very complicated and complex question. I said I wanted to know as to how did, as you were doing, conducting that research, ensure that whatever instruments that you used continued to measure that which you wanted to measure, the validity of your instruments, the reliability of your instruments. How did you ensure that they are reliable? How did you ensure that they are valid, they measure that which you want to measure? I once formed part of the delegation that went to DRC to observe elections. And DRC is a post-war country, typical. If you've never seen a post-war country, go to DRC. It's a typical post-war country. But people in DRC, they sit on streets with stacks and stacks of money, because they exchange money just on the street. There isn't any bank you'll go to. So if you have your dollar and you want their franc, or I think it's franc, they will just exchange it on the street. It will be at 12 midnight or morning in the day, and nobody will take that money away from them. As a matter of fact, because it is so hot, it's close to equator, if you go to their houses, they are not even using doors to close. They are using sheet. I'm talking about linen. And nobody breaks into their houses. But it's a post-war country. Talk of weapons, they are in abundance. Talk of poverty. I'm talking about real poverty. It's in DRC. Kinshasa is worse than the worst. I don't know, what is this many machojombes that are around here? The worst machojombes that you've seen in South Africa. But their crime is not as violent as ours. What is it that is unique about South Africa? Because indeed, we have poverty. South Zealand around the corner here has serious poverty. What is it that is unique about South Africa? That has never happened elsewhere in the country, in the world. That probably made our crime, taking into cognizance that, of course, other countries might be having violence. But what is it that is unique? I'm not very sure whether I was able to pick up that as I was reading the report. Poverty, yes, Switzerland, there's poverty, there's unemployment, there's lack of education and skills, and so on. But what is it that is unique about South Africa? Is there anything unique, or we are like any other country, but we then have our problems? I thought one will be interested to hear that one. You know, one of the issues that are raised in the report is the reduction of use of alcohol by pregnant women and provision of nutritional support to pregnant women, infants, and young children. And that was quite interesting to me, because I thought, wow, is there a relationship between abuse of alcohol and violence, I mean, from the children that will be born out of those mothers or by those mothers who, during their pregnancy, were using alcohol? I would have thought that they will have what is called, I don't know whether it's called alcohol syndrome, when those children are born. But is there a research that has been conducted that says those children are most likely to be violent as they grow up? I'm quite interested in that one as well. The report. Oh, okay. I think on the issue of culture, we've asked that question, many of us, because I think personally that it should have been defined. We don't have concepts that were defined in the report that we have, so we don't know whether it was defined or not defined, this culture, but also violence itself. Honorable Grunewald, then we will allow the Secretariat and the CSUR to respond, and we'll then take another round of questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I want to say that I welcome the report. If I've missed it, please correct me, but firstly, I would like to know, why did it take the Minister so long to release this report? According to the report, it has been handed to the Minister on the February 2009. This is November 2010. Are we sure that this report we're having today is the full report? I'm honest about this. I've posed various questions in Parliament to the Minister. When do we receive this report? I don't feel at ease that this is the whole complete findings of the report. I want to put it on record. The second thing is, Chairperson, the report refers to the violent nature and the causes of that. But what I don't see in this report, it's one thing about violent crime, is the, or are the reasons for the cruelty. And you actually refer to that. And I specifically want to refer to farm murders here. You know, I can understand, in a certain sense, if a criminal goes into a place and they take what they want to take. But what I can't understand, if they go to a farm, burn the women and the men with hot irons, and I don't even want to mention all the other cruelties, it doesn't make sense. And then they don't take anything. I see here is a reference to the politics of violent crime, but it does not address really the problem. And I would like to know, was there, well, clearly as far as I'm concerned, there was not a comprehensive study as far as the real reason for the cruelty of violent crime in South Africa. And I differ from Honorable Annelisa van Wyk. We do have a culture of violent crime in South Africa. And a lot of these reasons are stipulated, yeah, which I agree. But I also want to say, Chairperson, I do not accept that poverty is a reason for violent crime. And you actually mentioned that. Why in a place like the DRC, with the post-war trauma and everything like that, that you don't have these situations? In great respect, if I've missed it, correct me, but the report lacked the essence of what the report should have looked into, namely the cruelty of violent crime and the reasons for the cruelty of violent crime in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Grondewald. I think Ms. Annelies said she does not believe that South Africans are violent. I don't think she questioned the issue of crime itself being violent, but she was actually referring to South Africans, all of us. Yes. Indeed, I think it was explained earlier on that, in fact, according to this, CSVR was contracted in 2007 to conduct this massive work. And many of these topics were introduced each year. And like I indicated, it was early this year that the minister requested to table this report before the portfolio committee, but then it was said no, it has to go to cabinet first before coming here, and that is why there has been this delay. But otherwise, the minister intended to bring it to portfolio committee early this year. In fact, it appeared on our program for May, I think it was for May, but then it couldn't come before it had to be tabled before cabinet, and that is why it is coming today. But we also have CSVR, the one that conducted the research, so that I don't believe that anyone could doctor anything in this report, because they are also here to give reasons. I will agree with Honorable Grondewald when he says maybe, I don't know, but for me, I was looking for something unique, something new, something not that we all know, poverty, education, and so on and so forth. Something that will say, but this is what is unique about South Africa. You know, this is why I thought one would get something like that in the report. And but let's hear what they're going to say.
Okay, can I just clarify? This is the, because I think there's a lack of clarity, and I think you made it clear, this report was done by CSVR. So I'm going to ask CSVR to respond to a lot of the questions. But I just want to raise that one of the dilemmas for us has been that we, and maybe Mr. Kinnis has been a bit diplomatic in how he's put it in terms of his presentation, is that we have some very serious concerns around the final draft of the report that we received. Precisely because it just dealt with some of the issues that are raised here. First of all, we felt that the report was useful as pulling a huge amount of information together, which had been quite dispersed at different points. However, it's not as if there was something incredibly new and striking that hit us in the face around this report. It was, and even in terms of the recommendations, I mean, I think the point has been made that, and I think Mr. Kinnis made that point at the beginning, that the recommendations are not incredibly creative or something new. They, in fact, some of them are really issues that are on the JCPS cluster's agendas and are being worked through by the JCPS. And I think that possibly if there had been great engagement with different people in government from different sectors, then it may have had more value. But I think for us the fundamental issue was that the report was asked to look at why is crime so violent. and to explain the nature of crime and to talk about it in terms of culture is a problem. Because, first of all, when you talk about the culture of violence, you almost legitimize that culture. You always give it some legitimacy. And secondly, it becomes a glib, throwaway term that you use. I think one of the concerns that we need to put on record here is that our biggest concerns with this report are threefold. One, that it did not meet the requirements which was to explain why is crime so violent. And that was what we wanted out of the study. If you look at the terms of reference, that was a key crucial issue. Why is crime in South Africa so violent? Second is to really look at comparative, not just the desktop comparative, but to go into comparative, looking particularly in relation to southern countries. So looking at some of our neighbours in Africa, what is it that distinguishes our types of crime from their types of crime? And we didn't feel it did that sufficiently. And thirdly is the issue of that while the report is useful, it pulls together a huge amount of information, it really doesn't hit us in the face with something new, and even the recommendations are quite broad, quite general, and things that we've been talking about in government for some time. They're not strikingly new. So I think we just need to put on record that from the minister's side and from the secretariat side, those were some of our concerns. However, we have tried to present the report in terms of what the findings were. When Mr. Kinnock spoke about the limitations, I think those are essentially the weaknesses that we are talking about with the report. But so I would like to maybe hand it over to CSIR and get them to respond to some of the concerns. But I wanted to place on record that those were our concerns with regard to the report, although we must also say that it does pull a lot of information together, and from that point of view it is quite useful.
Good morning, and thanks, Honourable Chair, and to the members of the committee. I know many of you from 1999-2000. It's good to be, in fact, in this very same room. It's where we debated some of the Firearms Control Act legislation. I have my colleague David Bruce. I'm the Executive Director of the Centre for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation, and David Bruce, my colleague, who's the Principal Author and the Senior Specialist Researcher who was responsible for the report, is also with me, and we will share our responses to the question. I think just to say that the concept paper, which is 200 pages long, addresses some of the issues that have been raised, both in terms of international comparison, tries to look at some of the issues of our historical inheritance of violence, and as well as look at some of whether we are unique and or different, or whether we're the same as many other countries experiencing both post-conflict reconstruction and high levels of urban armed violence. An important report, and in a way just trying to focus your attention on some of these issues, is the supplementary report, which was done in April 2009. And it tried to address then much more specifically and succinctly why does South Africa have such high levels of violent crime. So those are perhaps two documents that, if you go through them in more detail, some of these issues hopefully will be addressed more thoroughly. However, given that I've got the opportunity to speak, is I think it's really important to understand that for CSCR, we locate the study very much within our colonial and apartheid history. We are absolutely clear that one of the key features of our society is that we are post-colonial, post-apartheid society, and that we have hundreds of years of structural violence and violence of other types. And it comes through very clearly in the conflict paper and in the supplementary report. We often, in fact, in the current report, don't look enough at state violence, and it's been raised here by some MPs, but certainly work that we're currently doing on kind of political protests and service delivery protests indicates that the use of police force is a key factor. But in terms of looking at why we are unique, I think sometimes it's not useful. There is this thing of South African exceptionalism. And I think what we have to understand is that at some level we share some similar histories, geographies, and current realities as many countries in the global south. So if you look at countries like Brazil, like Colombia, like Jamaica, and it's mainly, as the report indicates, it's a concentration of violence in urban areas. The report in the consent paper references some of these countries, but our focus was really to understand what is happening in our country. I think it's also important, and I don't want to go into detail, is that certainly our view generally within the CSCR is that violence is a learned behavior. It's socialized. We do not hold the view that people are innately violent. And so for MP Van Wyk, that's certainly not the intention of the report in any way to suggest that South Africans are by nature violent. We do not hold that view. We would also, and I'm sorry she's not here, is violence is never senseless. There is always a reason, there are always motivating factors, there are always environmental, individual, society, community factors that contribute to an individual making the choice whether or not to use violence. And so there is not one single cause to violence. And if that's what you're looking for, you will not find it anywhere, not in this report, nor in any piece of international research. There is no single cause of violence. It is complex, and there are a range of factors which contribute to violence being more likely to happen, and the converse, and I think Irwin Kinner says this, is that there are factors which can mitigate against the use of violence, what we call protective factors. And of course, there's a risk factor. So yes, alcohol, and the NIM study is very important, both globally and in South Africa. There is evidence to suggest that there is a direct link between the abuse of alcohol and drugs and violence. And we don't just see it in violent crime, we see it in things like motor vehicle accidents, where you know both our pedestrians, our passengers, and our drivers have high levels of alcohol toxicity. So those are what we would see the risk factors. So to jump the question of providing support to teenage pregnant mothers is very important for two reasons. One is that if she continues to abuse alcohol, her parenting skills will be diminished, and the child will grow up in an environment where alcohol use is seen as normal. And there are studies also to demonstrate that children, the alcohol fetal syndrome, that their performance at school is poor. But to come back to the issue of violence in South Africa, is that it's, and I think the report makes this clear, and I think Mr. Kinnis made it clear, is we need evidence base for understanding the nature and the causes of violence, both at a macro level and at a micro level. So when you're working within a particular community, you need to be asking yourself, what are the primary forms of violence in this community? Is it sexual? What are the weapons that are being used? Is it guns? Is it knives? And so that you then develop your strategy in terms of addressing that. For CSCR, we will accept that possibly the culture of violence is not the best use of the term, but we're grappling with what is another use of the term. And as the Secretary said, that it does seem to be a throwaway line. So you can talk easily because it helps you encapsulate a whole lot of things. And for us, it's an area of further research for us because it is something we feel the study begins to touch on but doesn't go into sufficiently. And so we continue that in other areas of our work. But I think certainly for the purposes of this report and for opening up the discussion, is for CSCR essentially a culture of violence. It doesn't it doesn't imply that a certain group of people or that in fact the nation as a whole are inherently violent. What it wants to say is that given our history and given our experience of violence both structurally and interpersonally, is that in our country we have begun to see violence as normative, that we see it as acceptable to use violence to deal with differences, and more importantly, we see it as legitimate. So what you will see often when people are, say, in a bar having a fight, someone will encourage someone to use violence. It's seen as that you have a right to use violence. That's what I mean by legitimacy. And so we then use the word culture to describe it. So it's not linked to a particular group, but it's linked to a practice where it appears in our country that we use violence fairly readily. And of course, I think the recommendation, I think Honourable MP Mishwesh talks about the lack of family structure. We know, and this is what makes us unique, is our migrant labour system of apartheid fundamentally destroyed families. We are living with the legacy of that. I know that often in the public discourse that people want to say apartheid is 15 years gone. It's not. It remains present in our day-to-day interaction. It remains present in where we live. And it remains present in who is most vulnerable to be a victim of crime. Now, we know that in the last 10 years, there have been significant reductions in our murder rate. And so, yes, we have made some strides there. And we aren't the most violent country in the world. And we don't have the highest levels of violent crime. But we are the most unequal society in the world. And this is where I would argue that the report points, and this is what I would see as something new. What the report is asking government to say is you need to pay attention to two things. One is the fact that much of the trio crimes are based and driven on what we would call a middle-class agenda. We're not saying neglect that. But what we're saying is that 60% of your crime is street robbery. You need to be paying attention to that as well, because those are working-class people. Okay? And not enough attention is placed on emphasizing and prioritizing that. We're also saying, in terms of the inequality, is that this is a whole of government response. So we're not saying it's just the Ministry of Police. But we're saying that unless we begin to address some of the gap between the rich and the poor in the society, so technically that's not just police's response. So in a sense, I think one of the important things the report is saying is we require a whole of government joined up response to addressing violent crime. I think I'm going to stop there and ask David Bruce to just respond. David, you can come here, please. To some of the issues of the definition of violence, the methodology, the criminal justice system, and the stuff around the cruelty and why the report doesn't address that.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for allowing me to present here. I wanted to maybe reinforce a couple of the points that Adele made, the one being just some of the issues about, you know, the causes of crime and the types of causes which we've given priority to in the final report. So I think there's quite kind of more extensive discussions of the causes of crime, particularly in the initial concept paper. And then also in the supplementary report, which is the seventh report, is a report which then kind of tries to speak to this issue about, you know, to what extent is South Africa unique, and what in what way is it unique, and particularly in talking about the what's unique about South Africa, the one issue that that report gives very high priority to is the legacy of apartheid and kind of institutionalized racism and the brutality of the apartheid system. And so it wouldn't be true to say that you know that we don't take into account our history. But also then I think just in the final report, what you know, sometimes people say, what about the history? But then sometimes people say, okay, but we've heard all about the history, but we want to know why this is still continuing. And so I think in the final report then, with the issues that we just sort of pulled out and emphasized in terms of our discussion of causes was very much more the factors which are much more kind of present in current day South Africa. But obviously you can't draw a wall between the past and the present, but just just so then but it wouldn't be true to say that we don't take kind of very serious account of South Africa's past. Also just then to say that in relation to this cultural violence issue that you know, nowhere in the report do we say that South Africa is as a whole a kind of violent nation. But what the culture of violence specifically is intended to embody is the idea that violence is in part about a normative acceptance of violence. And so, you know, one can talk about kind of all kinds of causes and things like that, but to some extent, violence is simply based on the fact that people believe it is okay to be violent. And so, insofar as, you know, in some ways it's a kind of tautology, whatever it is, because, you know, insofar as there is a lot of violence, it shows that there is a culture of violence. So, you know, again, as Adele said, you know, it's something that I have as a particular project of my own is to work more with this term to try and give it kind of give the term kind of more depth, because you know we acknowledge that sometimes it's used as just a kind of catch-all explanation or so then also just again this issue of there being nothing new, I'm just a bit concerned about that because what we had paid, you know, was a substantial amount of money. It was 3.5 million rand. The business of explaining violence is an international industry, which is, you know, carried out in kind of universities throughout the world. And the international investment in explaining violence is you know, goes into, well, what would it be, you know, possibly hundreds of millions or something like that. So, and you know, the South African discourse around violence, which, and you know, as you know, has been acknowledged, a lot of what the report does is to kind of integrate a lot of the research that has been done into a number of reports. And I should just say that there's 7 reports, and they are all available on the CSVR website, and there are no other reports other than those. You know, to expect this 3.5 million rand to develop a new explanation of violence out of the blue would be incredibly unrealistic. And there are new and innovative aspects to the report. The whole concept of the major forms of violence and the way in which it is used to describe violence is an innovative aspect of the report. The discussion of the politics of violence in South Africa is also a sort of important and innovative contribution. And I should just clarify then that in talking about, it's not that we've said that violence has become politicized post-1994. We don't really discuss the politics of violence prior to 1994. All that we mean when we talk about the politics of violence is that this is our essential point, that there are different groups, you could call them constituencies, who have contributed to giving a profile to certain aspects of the problem of violence. This is what we mean when we're talking about the politics of violence. This is what we mean, that there's different constituencies. In some ways, they are victim constituencies who have said to governments, look, we are being victimized, we are being brutalized, do something about this. And those groups have included, and they reflect the politics and power in South Africa. So the most powerful of those groups perhaps has been, you know, and it's another kind of single group, but is the kind of middle class and organized business. And so forms of violence which impact on organized business and the middle class are given priority attention in South Africa. Another important constituency has been organizations concerned with violence against women. And so South Africa has a very strong civil society sector concerned with violence against women. And to some extent, the concerns of that sector have been heard in by government. And so we have important pieces of legislation like the Domestic Violence Act and the Sexual Offences Act. Another constituency, and you know, as it happens, our director was the former director of Gun Free South Africa. But another constituency which has had a big impact on policy has been the organisation concerned with firearm violence. Another one, and has been whose voices have to some degree been heard, and again, I mean, all of these constituencies would probably then say that not enough has been done. But another constituency that has to some extent been heard has been the farming community. So one needs to, you know, value the fact that those constituencies have been able to organize themselves. One doesn't in any way want to, I wouldn't wish anyone to hear what I'm saying as a criticism of those constituencies for raising their concerns. But what we're talking about when we talk about the politics of violence is just that there are certain victim constituencies who, because they aren't politically powerful, they don't have an identity as a victim constituency, the violence to which they are subject is not seen as important, is not really visible in South Africa. So if we're talking about the problem of aggravated robbery in South Africa, then there's only certain... So aggravated robbery plays a significant role in contributing to the overall murder rate. But it's primarily as it's impacted on the middle class that aggravated robbery has been seen as a problem. So we have this idea that the trio crimes are the crimes that do the most damage or, you know, cause the most fear or things like that, when it's probably true that aggravated street robbery makes a much greater contribution to the murder rate. But aggravated street robbery isn't regarded as a priority crime in the same way. So that's just the sense in which we're talking about the politics of crime. And just the last thing is about kind of the issue of the solutions that we put forward. And this question, oh no, I think there's, I want to then speak to this issue about cruelty. The issue about the realism of the solutions was, so what we did was we were deliberately very, very selective about the types of solutions that we put forward. And so we didn't engage in an exercise of listing everything that we thought that government could or should do. We very deliberately, because we are very conscious of the fact that we live in a developing country where questions of resources and questions of capacity are a major challenge, and we then deliberately restrained our recommendations and limited our recommendations to recommendations which in some ways you know, which are either things which you know, government is partly doing and can better achieve by being more focused, or for instance, in the case of the recommendations around child and youth development, there is some government intervention on that field, but we just would, you know, see that as being so important that there'd be so much more investment in that. So if we're talking about the resources that are available to address crime and violence, then what we're saying is that insofar as there are those resources, a significant component of those resources need to be channeled much into kind of deepening our engagement with child and youth development. So I want to engage with this issue of cruelty, as it was expressed in the terms of reference of the study, it was expressed as the issue of gratuitous violence. I think what I would say is that at various points the reports do try and engage with the issue. So, for instance, in the initial concept paper, there is a discussion of the issue under the heading "The Degree of Violence." There's a study of murder, which involved an analysis of murder dockets in six areas, and in that study of murder, what we tried to do in a way which murder studies in South Africa have not done before was to almost kind of drill down into, you know, what is going on within each of these kind of subcategories of murder and kind of what are the motivations for the murders. And so, for instance, if one looks at the murders that take place relative to robberies, in the situations of robbery, generally, those types of murders, what seems to have happened is that the murder takes place where there is some form of resistance or non-cooperation, or the victim does something that in some ways antagonizes the perpetrator.
I will give you 2 minutes.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. I think what I would acknowledge is that we don't feel that we've satisfactorily resolved these questions to do with the questions of gratuitous violence or cruelty and so on, and that's something that I'm continuing to work on within my work at the moment. But also then, that there are, for instance, also then in the interviews with perpetrators, in the case studies of perpetrators, there was some engagement with the issue. One of our conclusions is that in some ways, to kind of further explore this issue, one would need to do a different kind of research, which wasn't done in this study, and as far as I understand, is possibly more resource-intensive, and that is a kind of in-depth kind of psychological profiling of perpetrators of violent crime. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you saying, say, the cost was 300 million? Three and a half million. Okay. You know, it is when you say you selectively put forward recommendations because some were not implementable. And what comes into my mind, remember, I'm just a politician and definitely not a researcher, but was to say, how objective then are these recommendations? And how did you ensure that you don't bring in an element of subjectivity in the research? Because if the research findings have pointed to those recommendations, implementable or not, it would have been better for us to know as to what those recommendations were, if it was the research findings that pointed out to those recommendations. Because the question then comes to my mind as to, then how did you deal with the issue of subjectivity and the issue of objectivity as we are conducting the report? And I mean the research, and really I'm not sure, but you've not told us as to what methodology did you use in this research. I don't have that information. And I still do not know as to what instruments did you use and how did you ensure validity and reliability of those instruments as we're conducting research, because for me we're talking about research here. And if you have the ministry who contracted you to conduct the research and raise the issues in the manner in which they are raising, it is surely worrying on our side as the portfolio committee. Was it value for money, for instance?
Mm.
That would be a question we have in our mind. We pass this budget and surely we'll want to know as to whether the money is properly utilized. And that is why I'm asking all these questions, because this is a research. And surely it has to talk to the methodology of research and adhering to some basic principles, which I'm not very clear of. Remember, I'm just a politician. Honorable Clark, Honorable Scholar Bannat, Honorable George.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions, if I may, and some comments. I mean, I think that I'm quite glad that CSVR seems to be indicating that perhaps the word of the use of the word culture is the wrong word to use. Because culture means it's a culture of people.
Mm.
And it means then it's part of your historical culture to be violent. And I don't think that's the case.
Mm.
So I think we need to accept, and I think, and that's what I'm saying, I'm glad there seems to be a recognition, probably the wrong word to use. And I think maybe that's something that needs to be sorted out. That's the first thing I wanted to say. But I also, just listening to some of the things that they were saying now, I think we must be very careful that we don't try and label violence on different racial groups. Violence is a societal issue. It doesn't matter who you are, it's a societal issue. So that's another point I wanted to raise. I was just going through this document here. I don't, and maybe it's in the bigger document, but I'm not seeing much that it said about the role of media in promoting violence. You know, just in the last few days, we've had a tragic incident in Gauteng at a school. And I was listening to the radio yesterday, and the amount of people phoning in saying, but we've got to do something about the impact that media is having. I'm not talking about newspapers now, necessarily. I'm talking about internet. I'm talking about films. I'm talking about TV. We had an incident a couple of years ago where a young guy, this youngster in Ridderport, I think it was, had knives and actually attacked a person. And then actually spoke about how he planned all of this. So I don't see that coming out in the report as to the role of media. I'm talking about internet, the type of films we broadcast, the type of things that people see. What impact is that having? A lot of what you're saying about the solution seems to be, maybe I'm getting it wrong, but it seems to be more directed at government must sort this out. And I don't think that government can sort this out alone. Government can certainly do its role in terms of policing, etc. But surely there's a role for the religious sector. There's a role for society that has to actually take stock of what's going on. It can't just be government. And I don't get a sense of that coming out. It is there about civil society, but I think that's something that we've got to look at far more. What is the role of society and all different groupings in society to address it, together with government? And it brings me to the issue as well, Chairperson, that, you know, we've got to also look at how do we change the mindset of people? I don't agree. I mean, I think that if you look at some of these incidents of violence that happens, it's because people just snap. There was an incident in Johannesburg a few years ago where a person on a scooter sat in front of a car, and the motorist chased the person, stopped, pulled out his gun, and killed the person. Now, I don't think that was premeditated, that the person said when he got in his car that day, I'm going to find somebody to shoot. It's something that's going on. And I think we've got to really look at these things as well. So those are just my comments. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very keen to have responses to two of my questions, if I may. One was what sort of level of buy-in has there been by government to this entity about the results, and will we see a sort of implementation in relation to the recommendations when looking at strategic moves going forward? So I would like an answer to that question. And also, was there any section of the study done in relation to their recommendation on page 60 that there be an advocating against violence with political leaders promoting a non-violent culture? Because as I said, there is a great deal of violence in political speech and speeches in this country. I'm interested in what sort of impact that has on the levels of violence. So there are the researchers. Did they do that research? Is it in the document? I didn't hear an answer. Thank you.
I want to add on the issue to say this report that we have as members of parliament, not the one that you might have as CSVR, this one which I have, which I had opportunity to read over this weekend, because at least I got it on Friday. There isn't any reference to our past in this one. And that is why there's no way I would have therefore said there is a reference. There isn't. If you read this report, the emphasis is on the culture of violence that we suddenly have in South Africa. And that is why, as I was reading, you know, on a number of pages, when this matter is being emphasized, what effective culture is this? Because personally, I don't know of any nationality or any South African or any grouping in South Africa that embraces its culture of violence as its culture. And that is why. So I can only refer to what I have. I can't refer to what I don't have. And in this which I have, I couldn't find any area that refers to the history of this country as having contributed, maybe that might even be having some role. I'm coming to you, okay, I'm sorry about that. You know, the lady is actually saying violence is legitimized in that people will be fighting and it is common and so on, and that commonality therefore sort of legitimizes violence. But I'm saying the reason why we have such high crime statistics because people go and support them, because the 113 robberies were reported just the previous day in this country, and assaults and so on, because people see that as crime. I'm just raising that from a point of my own understanding, and probably the issues of inequalities, which I fully agree it exists, but it has been said many a time that we have two economies in this country. That is how it was put, and I think that is exactly what has repeatedly been said, to say how do we ensure that we close this gap of two economies that are existing in the country, one being too rich and the other one being too poor. And how do we deal with that? And how do we bring everybody on board? Those that live in the first world country in South Africa, those that live in the third world country in South Africa, how do we bring everybody on board? I'm not sure whether that is also being addressed in the report. I'm just raising these issues because,
Madam Chair, I must be honest, I'm very disappointed with this report. You see, fortunately for me, I was at the meeting, JCPC, where there was also PUSA, where this decision was taken to decide that we must investigate
the violent nature of our crimes. And at that time, the question was, we wanted answers. You know, I'm very disappointed when the lady said, no, we gave answers which are within the ambit of operation of the government. That's not what the government requested. Of course, that they wanted answers. Difficult or not difficult. And I think, in my view, what you should have done is to give answers. If there are areas where it's practical or not practical, that should have been the business of the government. Leave it to the government and say, these are our findings, these are the recommendations. If for some reason the recommendations are not practical, leave it to the government. Now you say you gave them because some of them you wanted to work with Ngambi. And you see also, that's why you would find now people like Mr. Khonawa, I thought you would answer it. He says, yes, this report has been doctored. Because I think it's important. Why is this report doctored? Because that's what he said. He said there's some information that has been... I even asked when he was left, I said, do you really believe? He said, yes. But you should answer it. Because if you don't answer that, unfortunately, you're putting us in a very difficult situation. Where we are discussing a report which we don't know whether now certain parts of this document, this report, are left out or not. I thought you would answer with a clear answer that there is nothing in this document that has been taken out, or there is something, if say there is nothing. So that also when we look at this with this report, we now understand. For instance, the other questions, I saw you said there must be statistics reported at the police stations. I ask you a question. What has violent crime to do with statistics, where the statistics are reported? Because I don't believe that where the statistics are announced in the street or in the... To me, there is nothing to do. But if you could help me see, this is how... Because we're talking about violent crime. We're not talking about crimes and violence. I wish you to say to us, if the crime statistics are released at the police station, this is how this is going to impact. You have not answered those questions. But I must be honest, I'm saying again, unless there's something which you have not told us, the report does not seem to me, it gave us the answers which surely those who mandated you wanted them. Whether difficult or not difficult, to me, I would say, if the answers are difficult, to me, it would not be their business. It would be the business of those who mandate you to get the answers.
And in fact, one would ask as to whether there has been time in South Africa in the history of crime where crime was not violent. Mm-hmm. And when did it change to be violent? Did you trace maybe such a phase in the history of this country where crime was not violent, and when exactly did it change, so that probably we can then relate that to what is happening? I mean, really, Honorable Reverend Misho?
Thank you, Jefferson. I want to echo the words of Honorable Mr. George that this report is failing us and disappointing in a number of ways. There are very specific questions that have been asked that are not answered. When you look at the introduction, they say the report contains six parts. Now, in component three, they look at the causes of sexual violence. In the report, they say nothing about it. And also what the solutions are. What are the causes? Because it is alleged that they looked at in component three, but nothing has been said about in what we have been given this morning. And also in component five, they have case studies on perpetrators of violent crime. I'm sure those case studies should be giving us hints of why are those perpetrators doing what they're doing? Why have they done what they did? But it is quiet about it. We have not been given information about what those perpetrators of violent crime have said, why they did what they did. So I'm very keen to know what these perpetrators have said. At least one or two. Why have they committed and why are they committing these violent crimes? Because they did case studies. We are also told that violence is a learned behavior. From who this is learned, I'm not sure. I want to know what South Africans are exposed to that causes them to be violent. From whom are they learning this? Because when you look at many other countries, you can include Lesotho and Swaziland. They're very, very poor. They have areas that are much poorer than South Africa. And yet, they are not as violent as South Africa. So, what are South Africans learning that these other people in SADC are not learning? Where are we learning this violent crime because they say it's a learned behavior? Who is teaching South Africans and how can we stop that kind of teaching that South Africans are exposed to that causes them to be violent? And lastly, on the issue of the legacy of apartheid, nobody would argue with the fact that that system was very brutal. Nobody will argue against that. But what is interesting for me is that many of the people that were directly impacted by this brutal system of apartheid have not committed the violent rapes, sexual rapes that we are reading about. Now, where is the connection? Those that were directly impacted by the brutality of apartheid have not been as violent as what we are seeing today. I'm not talking about political violence. When you look at what's happening in the schools, when you look at the rapes in the schools, many of the perpetrators were not even part of that apartheid system. So where did they learn this from? Why are those who were impacted by this brutality of apartheid not the ones who are perpetrators? And it's those who were not involved in the oppression of apartheid. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, sir. I have asked questions and I have not heard any single of those questions responded to. I'm adding the last question to my questions. Probably I'm also contributing to this confusion. Instead of giving chance to respond to all these questions, I put questions on questions. So I'm very happy on your findings. You are talking about availability of firearms and widespread use of other weapons. Availability, it means to me that if you apply for a license, you get it there and there. You see them everywhere. They are used everywhere. Now, you don't say to me, how do you deal with this availability? That contributes of firearms and other weapons to the violent crime in this country. You are not saying that to me. You are talking here about public areas that are gun-free. That, to me, it's not enough. It is difficult to say, leave your guns in your homes. Is it, why can't you say, because you know, a peace-loving person, when he has a gun, he suddenly becomes intolerable, impatient, and aggressive because he has a gun. You see, I don't have a problem seeing people. You see, I believe that if we exchange first, but there are no arms. Arms can be a gun can be a knife, those are arms. As much discussed, the knife deception. But if we exchange blows, that is not to me violence. Eh? Because it's very rare that if I give a snap left hook, I can kill you. Or if you, you know. So I'm saying, what is violence?
Bizarre
situation here. We the Secretariat is speaking quite harshly about the report that's being presented. It's as though there's been a decision that actually they feel the whole report and the many reports that are comprise this final one are somehow irrelevant, and maybe it's been a waste of money. I mean, that's a definite indication of what I'm getting about this cupping that's going back and forth here. If it's already all been done and the recommendations have already all been implemented, why have we paid 3.5 million rand for the report? I think that question has to be asked.
I don't believe the Secretariat is saying this. The Secretariat said the report managed to gather many researches conducted together. Mm-hmm. But we've been asking one question, the validity. The ability of the report to measure that which it was supposed to measure. Why is crime in South Africa violent? That's the answer we're looking for. And it is saying unemployment, this and that. And all of us sitting here can say that. And I think that is what the Secretariat is saying. To say there isn't something new. If you go to National Crime Prevention Strategy, for instance, combating strategies, for instance, many of these things that are here are already there. Is there anything new? Is it able to respond to the question, why is crime in South Africa violent? And it is very true, if you read this report, you get the information that it would seem like South Africa is this most violent country with a culture of violence. It's that. And it puts a lot of emphasis on this one. And that is why you're sitting alone, you then say, but really, I don't have any culture of violence amongst the people I live with, or amongst my people, for instance. Nobody embraces violence. And why this culture? I mean, this is what we are saying here. We're looking for the answer to the question as posed. This is research. And CLVR is from time to time saying, we selectively. I have a serious problem with that. For me, it's a weakness. Because why would you select? If the research has said these are the findings, why select? We want to know what the research findings are and therefore recommendations as they are related to the findings, the research findings. And that is why we also are asking for the methodology that was used. 3.5 million is money.
I've been worried about this between CSFC, SVR, and the Secretary. Has the government accepted this report? Or the department accepted this, or it has rejected it? Because from what she said, this we don't agree. What is the status of this report?
I think the status of the report is that the contractors have been their payments were finalized in after I think in 2009, right? December 2008, so before the final reports were on the table. I think we have accepted that the report is an incredibly useful report for us to engage around. However, we have said, and we have said this quite categorically to CSER, we accept that this report is an it provides important material, and we need to engage further with the report. However, and I think Mr. Kinnis has pointed that out, however, we have also said that the report, there are certain areas of concern which we as government have about the report. It's not our habit of government to change somebody else's report and to try and make sure that they write it. If you commission somebody to do a report, they come back to you with a report. You don't then change that report. In fact, the copies, just for the honourable member Hunabas, the copies that we got from CSER were in read-only, so we couldn't change the report. However, we've said that there's some useful things in this report, but there are areas that we are not happy with. And we're very clear here today, we're not happy with certain areas. We don't feel some of the fundamental issues. And if you look at our presentation to this portfolio committee, we've included a way forward where we say the problems that we have with the report, this is what we as the Secretariat are going to do to take that process forward. We're going to be engaging with a range of different academics on why crime is so violent, because I know that we've already started that process, where there are very intense interviews that are taking place with prisoners who have been involved in crime, etc. And we are engaging in that process. We've spoken about the CSS process. We've spoken to you about the process we're engaged in with the JCPS. So I think the long and the short of it is we accept that the report is a useful report, but we have highlighted certain problems that we have with the report, and we're quite happy to go on record and say these are concerns about the report. But we accept that there is some value in the report. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Is it your phone?
Okay, just this might be a repetition. I understand that people got the report this morning, and so with due respect, it's clear from some of the questions that the report has not been read, and so it does make it difficult to engage with it. Just let me reiterate. There are 7 reports. The report that you are sitting with is component 6. And it's the key findings and recommendations of the study. So it's a high-level report, okay? It draws together the 200-page concept document. That's a very important document for you to read if you want to understand the nature of violent crime in South Africa. The other reports on the perpetrators, on sexual violence. Those reports go into detail. So some of you have asked, why aren't those recommendations in this report? Because when we looked at all 6 components, we drew out what we saw were the key high-level issues. And so many of the questions you're asking are, why isn't there more specific recommendations? There are in those individual reports. And so, in a sense, it's really important that this is a comprehensive overview of the nature and some of the causes of violent crime in South Africa. And we then chose, and it was a deliberate choice, on given that we've got one of the highest murder rates in the world, which is why we made a decision, an informed decision, that one of the components, in fact, component 2, was looking at the circumstances of the occurrence of murder in 6 areas with high rates of murder. So just reading this report will not give you the full picture. It gives you the high-level issues which we try and draw out. With regard to, issue of... Yeah, okay, so that's the report. I think I've said everything on the report. The issue of the culture of violence, I think we said it once and I'm going to repeat it, is that we accept that the concept of the culture of violence and the term might be problematic in that it needs to be unpacked more. However, and if you look at our murder rates, if murder is the one figure that is used globally by multilateral agencies like the United Nations to record and to compare violent crime across countries. Now, we know that many countries cannot record that data. So it's important to say that in countries where there is available data, South Africa is regarded as one of the most violent countries in the world. We have just over 16,000 murders annually. You cannot tell me with that figure that we do not have violence in the country. So, just to reiterate, with the available data for countries across the world, we usually sit around about 4th or 5th. Okay. So we are regarded as one of the most violent countries in the world. And that's based on evidence. It's not based on perception. It's not based on hearsay. It's not based on anecdotal evidence or an example of one road rage incident. Okay. I think we're very clear that the issue of the culture of violence needs to be explored, and we're exploring it in many different ways. And the question is, where is this learned? And that's a long discussion. I mean, in some ways, we would really look forward to much more engagement on this report. But one of the things that the Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation does is we look at issues of collective trauma and what we call transgenerational trauma. It's accepted in many countries, and certainly post-Holocaust survivors. We're talking 45 years, 60 years later, where the trauma of Holocaust survivors is repeating itself in the children and grandchildren. We work with military veterans. We are working with their children because their stories are being told. You know Jonathan Janssen's stuff on the poison tree. The stories and the way we tell our history and the story we tell ourselves about our history get conveyed to our children and our children's children. And so it's an accepted phenomenon, particularly in countries having experienced high levels of violence and conflict. But that's a whole other area. And sociologically, we will stand on the premise that we believe violence is a learned behavior. One gets socialized into accepting violence as an acceptable means of resolving conflict and difference. And so I would ask the committee's patience with the notion of the culture of violence. Yes, we have put that in because we thought it would be a useful term to describe a number of phenomena. And clearly it isn't useful, and we need to go back to that. I think just to reiterate and support what the Secretary said is these documents have not been altered in any way to our knowledge, and they actually now are the property of the Ministry of Police. They are not our intellectual property, but we were commissioned to do this for the Ministry of the Police. It is the property of the Minister. It no longer is CSCR document. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to government. In terms of engaging with government, we don't believe that there's been sufficient engagement. And it's clear, as the Secretary mentioned, that there have been differences of opinion. We have understood the report, and obviously, in terms of our methodology, we recognize that there are some gaps, that there's some weaknesses, but I think there can be much more engagement. And certainly the Secretariat has indicated that we can engage more on this issue. So there is more room for that. And I know people feel like I haven't answered some of the questions, so just to Honourable MP, my reference to the fact that there's a hell of a lot of information contained in many of the reports. So, for example, your issue of availability of firearms. One of the very specific recommendations is the strengthening of the implementation of the Firearms Control Act. So not just the gun-free zones. Okay, that's a very practical and specific recommendation. And again, it is somewhere in the report. So I accept, you know, this is an 80-page document or 68-page document. But there's a lot of information here that might not be seen. And I want to, the Honourable Minister Muleki George, it was under your MP, under your leadership that we had gun-free zones in the Firearms Control Act, and that it was part of the innovation of that act. And so that remains a challenge for how does the minister, in collaboration with communities, ensure that aspect of the act get implemented. So just to remind you that stuff has been there for a long time. And I think we know, maybe just one example is the recommendation of the strengthening of the implementation of the Act we've just seen last week, that it's in our press statement, that with the review of the Central Firearms Registry, there's clearly moves to strengthen the implementation of that Act. So I think on the one hand, we care that there are some things that are already being done, but we do believe that there needs to be greater engagement and mutual engagement, not this report is not sufficient. It's how do we fill some of the gaps? But we do believe that we met some of our mandate on this.
Right. Well, I just wanted to make one or two points about the methodology, which is just, okay, there's six reports and then there's a supplementary report. The first report is a concept paper, which is tries to draw together a lot of the kind of information that's available from research that has been conducted in South Africa and some international research into presenting a kind of overall picture of violence and kind of an analysis of its causes. The second report was a murder docket analysis, and the issues of the kind of validity and reliability of the docket analysis are discussed in a methodology section at the back of that report. And also, for instance, issues of the reliability of information that is discussed or validity of it that's discussed in the concept paper are also discussed there. The third report is a report on sexual violence, and that uses another docket analysis. It integrates a lot of information, and then it also uses a docket analysis, data from a docket analysis of rape dockets that was conducted that was completed just before the report was compiled. The fourth report is a kind of analysis of the issue of inequality and how it relates to violence and how it relates to the other kind of the relationship between inequality and factors such as marginalization and exclusion and so on. Then the fifth report is a case study of kind of perpetrators so it's based on a series of interviews with 20 perpetrators of violent crime, incarcerated perpetrators of violent crime. And so, you know, a case study approach is based on, isn't essentially a kind of quantitative type of methodology. It's more a kind of type of qualitative methodology. So it's intended to kind of deepen understanding, but it isn't, something. The issues of, there's always questions about to what extent one can kind of generalize the kind of conclusions or findings from case study research. And then the sixth report, which is this report, is not a summary of the final report. It's not a summary of everything that's in those reports. It's what we tried to do with that report was we tried to kind of say, well, okay, we've done all of this, these different studies and now what is the kind of view that this presents us, you know, that it leaves us with? So at the end of the day, if you're asking about the final recommendations, and I can tell you about the kind of motivation for each of the recommendations, and I can motivate them to you, but to talk about them in relation to strict, there isn't a kind of strict relationship between kind of quantitative kind of scientific data and kind of any of the conclusions. There's a strong motivation, and it's based on kind of some level of expertise and understanding of the overall problem of violence, some level of attempt to integrate a lot of what's been said about what needs to be done about violence, both in terms of South African text and international text, but to link it very directly to specific, for instance, quantitative kind of findings. Well, in certain cases, one could do that. But obviously, as is apparent in this meeting, the issues of interpretation are contested. So, for instance, we calling for a mobilization against violence on the basis of the assumption that there is a culture of violence. But if one's saying that there isn't a culture of violence, then one is saying that there's no need to mobilize against violence in South Africa because it isn't something that can be addressed by kind of social mobilization. So obviously there are kind of big debates that needs to be had around the issues which are put forward in this report, in these reports.
I don't believe that anyone is saying there isn't violence, but I think what we are saying is that if we give it a name cult, then that creates a problem. You know, there is crime, that crime is violent. Rape by its nature is violent. Murder by its nature is violent. Robbery by its nature is violent. But then to legitimize it by saying it's a culture. I mean, culture is something that is accepted. It talks to your values, it talks to your beliefs, it talks to everything. I don't believe that there is any grouping in South Africa that believes in violence, but it is there. And that is why we then have to get get an answer to that one aspect to say, but why? Because people are saying it is a culture. It is my culture to eat in the morning, for instance. It is. It can be. It is my culture to speak my language in the manner in which I will. Probably my language is part of my culture. It is my culture to put on a this. When I go to church, for instance, or when I visit my in-laws, it is my culture, and it is acceptable. When I visit my in-laws and I don't have a hat on my hair and I'm married to them, then I'm seen to be violating the culture. Now, if we are saying violence is a culture, in my understanding of culture, we are literally legitimizing, we are saying it's something that can be passed on to generations as something acceptable. I think that is the issue that we are raising. And I think you are saying probably you needed to use. And we're not questioning the issue that there is violence. There is violence. Rape is violent. I mean, so do get into my house, even if I'm not there. For me, that is violence. And that is why I further said, it would have been much better for us to have seen even how you define your concepts used. Because as I was reading here, I ended up being confused as to how do you actually define violence. Are you defining it in terms of crime? And I had in my mind as to whether corruption, can it be seen to be one other violent type of crime? Is it part of it or not? I'm just raising this thing and understanding the fact that we've not seen your document that is defining concepts. All that we can do is this document that we have seen as members of parliament that was distributed to us, and probably we also rely on what the secretariat is saying, because I want to believe that the secretariat saw the whole report and they read the whole report, and this what they're saying is that they're not happy. There are some witnesses. You responding to me to say the methodology on I think it's a paper to whatever, it is there at the back of the report. I don't have it, and you are here, and that is why I was actually asking if you can tell us the methodology that you used, and I'm expecting you to give us that answer, because I don't have that document here. And it is on the basis of that I'll be able to make my own conclusions as to whether the methodology, and you've said to us you use 20 case studies. And I sit there, I visited Barberton Police, prison one time, and interviewed 40 people in maximum prison. All of them had committed murder. And I said to them, tell me, how many years are you serving? That is their sentence. 39 of them were serving between 15 and 21, except for one that had murdered a white person, was serving a life sentence. Can I make a conclusion out of that? I just want to ask, is it a representative type of sample? I understand when you're saying yours is qualitative, not quantitative. I will understand you wanted to get in-depth understanding. But I'm just citing these examples to say, this is research. We expecting you to say, even that those case study or those people those case studies were representative. In terms of numbers, there was a sample that is representative, that out of it we can generalize. We can draw conclusions that can actually be generalized. But if 20 is not enough, it gives us a problem. It creates this research to be so weak. I'm just raising these things. We're talking about research here. We're not talking about opinions. We're talking about research, something that has been researched and followed all the principles of research, a representative sample, for instance, that can enable us to generalize after the research. I mean, these are the things that we just are asking for in the whole research. I'm not sure whether we want to proceed. I don't know whether, Deputy Minister, you want to say something.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, indeed.
Can I stop you just there? Because I think you must speak less. I don't know whether the CSVR would want to say something as we close, because I think we're moving towards closing the meeting. CSVR, if you want to say something.
Honourable Chair, I mean, we can answer the question on more detail on a search if you want to us to do that for the record. We could talk to you afterwards. Take your guidance from you. Would you want us to respond more directly on the research methodology?
I'm not quite sure in what kind of detail you'd like me to answer this question, but okay, as I said, the first paper is a concept paper which is tries to integrate literature primarily. The second study was then a study of murder, and what we did there was we using census data and SAPS data on levels of murder in each station area, we try to identify areas with the highest rate of murder. And so the areas that we selected there were, again, they were within a group of about 50 police stations that had the highest rates of murder in the country. And then using other criteria, we selected from within that group of 50 police stations, 6 police stations. And then what we did was we aimed to analyze. It varies between police stations relative to their murder rates, but it was on average 200 dockets. Per police station, but then also, and you mentioned Altbecker's name, it was particularly a concern that he'd raised about the representativity of murder studies that have been conducted by the SAPS, because generally they conducted on the basis only of closed dockets, and Altbecker has suggested that there might be systematic differences between closed and open dockets. Because open dockets would be those murders which are more difficult to solve, which would generally be a different category of murders. So we incorporated a sample of open dockets as well as closed dockets in the study, and then we compared the open dockets, the kind of profile of the open dockets and the closed dockets, And what we did was using random sampling kind of techniques. We selected a random sample of dockets at each station, and there were dockets from the 2001 to 2005 period. So that was the murder study. Then the study of sexual violence was used again integrated a lot of existing information from existing studies of sexual violence, and one of those then was a study which CSVR had been involved in and was in the process of completing during the course of 2008, and that then was also based on a study of over 2,000 rape dockets, which were in Gauteng. And so what we emphasize then is that data is within the study of the questions about rape is to what extent reported rape is representative of rape more generally. So it's understood that reported rates and rate dockets aren't necessarily completely representative of the overall process of rates, but nevertheless, rate docket studies do kind of yield certain information which is difficult to come back to by other means. So again, there are issues of sampling there. Again, it was areas with higher incidence of rape, which were the focus of that study. I'd have to check again on the details exactly of the number of police stations, but it was a quite a large number of police stations in Gauteng that was the basis for the data in that study. Then, for instance, in the perpetrator study, of the imprisoned perpetrators, there were elaborate questions to do with, how to select people, what kind of sampling procedure to use. But as I've emphasized, that is regarded much more as qualitative data rather than quantitative data. We did try and ensure some kind of representativeness, but with that kind of thing, in the end, the one fundamental issue is that people self-select themselves, because people can, in that kind of study, the people can either decide not to participate or they can agree to participate. So again, you might have a kind of bias the people who choose not to participate might tend to be different kinds of people. So that's the data. That's the main kind of original data, and that's the basis of the study.
I think just to reiterate the point that for us there are certain things that the report has highlighted that we would like to take forward, that they've consolidated. But for us there's some still unanswered questions, but we don't intend just leaving those. We have developed a process, as you can see, under the way forward, in terms of taking that process forward. And thanks for the opportunity for us to present here today. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much, my chairperson. I think all the challenges that I left are still in existence. I don't think that there is a solution that we're getting from the report. But because there was this specific mandate that was given to the professionals to do that research, let's hope that we're going to use that document to find answers. Because at the moment, I don't think that we do have enough answers as far as the research is concerned. And I agree with you on issues of it's politicizing, actually. Because if a person who is white kills a black person, gets 10,000 rand, fine. And then a black who kills a white gets a life sentence, then it is crime is being politicized. So what happened previously is still happening presently. So I think the police alone will never be able to do it to solve those problems. So it needs everybody within society to work together in order for us to work on the mindset of our people, as said by Honorable Greg over there. So all in all, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the researchers, and thanks to members for those questions that they asked. These are the very same questions that have been asked by the Cabinet and also by ourselves as a ministry. But unfortunately, the report, there was no way that we could doctor the report. It was supposed to come here because of the funding that has been used. 3.5 million is a lot of money. Because they just say that as a ministry that we received the report and then we did not adopt or accept the report, it must come to Parliament. Parliament must take the final decision. Therefore, we are saying that maybe after the members have read through the report, that is the 700 and something pages, maybe there are some new answers that will come out of that report. And then we'll be obliged to be called again here and the researchers to come and respond to questions from members of Parliament. Again, I know I'm from there. We must respond to Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I want to thank the CSVR, the Secretariat and the Ministry for appearing before the Portfolio Committee to brief us on this report. What has been said today and this morning is that we have a document that put together most of research work that has been performed before in this country, but also elsewhere in the country related to this topic. And that is appreciated because we can always refer to that. And as the Portfolio Committee, it definitely would be in our interest to get the report. The 200 or 2,000, whatever, we don't mind reading that. We will be more than keen to read. It is in our interest to know as to whether there are other options that are in that report that can be implemented in order to deal with this violent crime. It is also very true that if you read the document, the one that I have here, which you say it is sort of an overview of the work that you have done, it does put a lot of emphasis on culture of violence. But I appreciate the fact that in this meeting we have all agreed that probably the word culture is problematic, and I fully agree with that. It is indeed problematic. I also agree with the fact that indeed our crime is violent. There is no way we can regard rape as anything less than being violent. It doesn't matter as to whether a person assaults you or not, but rape by its nature is violent. I think there's no way we can say murder, and as the lady from CSVR is saying, 16,000 plus murders committed just last year can make us say our crime is not violent. Robbery by its nature, for instance, we recorded something like 113,000 plus in the previous financial year, and that is quite violent. But I also believe that we need maybe to find that which is unique to South Africa, if there is anything, that which is unique. I'm saying that because, as I said earlier on, I'm 28 kilometers away from Swaziland. I can simply drive to Swaziland and come back and go and buy anything in Swaziland. If anybody lived in Swaziland, the chances are that anybody in Swaziland, even if they may want some money, they will take money and run away. But they will not shoot me. They will not probably want to rape me. They will not. That is what might actually happen. Why it is easy for a criminal in South Africa to get into my house, take my TV, and not get satisfied with that, go on to shoot me, to rape my child, a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 9-year-old? Why? What is it that we have not done correctly? And that is why we are so worried about this subject, to say definitely it needs answers. I sit here really not believing that the research was put on answering that question. I don't believe so. I think the research managed to probably bring up some issues, but to say of all these issues, this is what we think is unique about South Africa. This is what, basing it on this, I think it doesn't give us that. If I were to base my argument on this, which I have, I cannot base it on any other document that I've not seen. I don't believe it is spot on in answering that question. I still remain with a question that says, why is our crime so violent? Why, if somebody is poor and needs money and decides to steal, why is he not stealing my cell phone and run away? Why would a person come to me and say, give me my cell phone, take my cell phone, take my card, and go on to stab me?
Why? Why would a person do that? And that is a question that I think we've not responded to properly. I think the question also that was asked by Honorable Kunewald, to say you go into a farmer's house, you steal this, you leave, you don't take anything. I mean, all those things. Or you go to where? I think these are the issues. And like I have said, there surely in any research will be some strengths of the research and will be some weaknesses of the research. And I think even in this research, there are strengths of this research, but also there are serious weaknesses in this research that actually needed to be overcome. And having said that, let me thank you for this interaction that we have had this morning. And as we get that report and we get some new information in the report, we might actually call you back to come and have a further discussion, particularly with CSVR. I have not closed the meeting. Thank you very much. Tomorrow's meeting. Oh, okay. To the portfolio committee, we are meeting tomorrow at 5 to adopt minutes, and the meeting will be in the old assembly chamber. After the house meeting, the meeting is adjourned.
It's not even that expensive.
Okay.